stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM Chat with the Labs conference call. Today's call is being recorded. You should have received charts for today's call. If you did not receive them, please email Christine Normile at christine.normile@us.ibm.com. Again, that email address is C as in cat, H R I S as in Sam, T as in Tom, I N like Nancy, E dot N like Nancy, O R M like Mike, I L E at us.ibm.com. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Jerry Kazee, Director, IBM Informix Database Development. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and hello, everyone, and welcome to our March edition of Chat with the Lab. Growing up, I always loved the mystery, and many of you must as well, because we've got just a tremendous response on today's Chat with the Lab, which is titled Unlocking the Mysteries Behind Update Statistics. Before I turn you over to John Miller, there's a little bit of business that I'd like to take care of, if it's okay. Want to put a few plugs out for some upcoming events and get a couple reminders so that you can get them on your calendar. First of all, I want to remind all of you, if you haven't signed up yet for iDug, which is coming up in May in Tampa, there's still time to do that. I know that it should be a great conference. The IIUG has done, a really spectacular job of putting together a good event. A number of folks from the lab are going to be there, and I know a number of speakers from the user community will be there as well. So hopefully I can see many of you down there in Tampa in May. A couple other things that I'd like to have you start thinking about. One's clear out in October. And that's our new Information on Demand conference. It's going to be in Anaheim. I would relate it back to the old user conferences that we used to have when we were part of the Informix company. I'm pretty excited about it. There's a tremendous amount of planning that's already going into the event. And again, I hope it's something that we'll see many of you at, so start looking for information on the Information on Demand event in October. I was asked by Linda Spina to make sure that I told all of you that she has scheduled the follow-up to Robert Uhlman's chat with the lab last month on spatial. Part two of that chat with the lab is going to be scheduled Wednesday, March 22nd. She will be sending out some email notices about that event, but if you can put it on your calendar and then look for a note from Linda, and Robert will be able to finish the chat that he started last month. So with that and getting the business out of the way, I am going to turn the session over to John Miller, SDSM. I don't think I really need to go into an introduction with John. Most of you know him. Hopefully today's session will be good. I know we've got great attendance today. John?
Thank you very much, Jerry. Good morning, everyone. We're here today to talk a little bit about update statistics and what goes on behind the scenes and really look at what changes have transpired over update statistics. And update statistics is there to influence the optimizer and make the optimizer make better decisions for you. And if we're trying to look at the problem that update statistics is solving, it's a lot like a dice problem. When you throw dice, you want to know how many dice are going to be won. Similarly, the optimizer, it is given a query by a user, and it needs to find out an optimal plan. Now, you can look at the picture on slide 2 and, make some type of estimate. But really, the information is very sparse because you just get a picture of the dice or a picture of the table is what the optimizer gets. It would be nice to know how many dice you have. Are they six-sided or 12-sided? Do the corners of the dice, Are they rounded off or are they square? And that's similar to the optimizer. You know, we'd love to say that most user data is normal and follows traditional distribution patterns, but that's not the case. Everyone's data has some type of relational, relation between it. It's specific to that type of data. You know, some data follows general patterns, but generally not all data. And so that's what update statistics provides for the optimizer, is a look at how your data is normalized. You know, how many rows, how many values of a certain one, is there a specific value that really stands out? You know, we hope it's that, you know, ship sales value that's really high. So that's really, you know, the information, and that's brought home by, you know, slide 3. You know, the optimizer can make a better decision with more information. And the better the information, the more accurate the estimate. And not that the optimizer, you know, is not going to pick the perfect plan up front, but it's going to have more information, more confidence behind its decision. And if you give it very little information, it's going to make decisions based on what traditional standard normalized data is. If you give it lots of information, it's going to make decisions based on your data model. And so that's really the problem Update Statistics is trying to solve for the DBA, to provide the information for your system and your queries to be optimized with a high degree of confidence. So if we move on to slide 4, we will look at all the information that Update Statistics and all the functionality Update Statistics deals with. There's a little bit of Update Statistics has a few pieces behind it. You know, it collects information for the optimizer, and that's where this talk is going to focus on. There's what we call statistics, and that is the low mode. Then there's something called distributions, and we'll get into detail on all this, which is medium and high mode. Update Statistics actually deals with managing the distributions so you can drop them or remove them from the system. And Update Statistics is the only way upon which a DBA can force the stored procedures to be compiled. So normally the stored procedures are just compiled the first time you execute it, but if you want to compile them all up front, recompile them, Update Statistics is your guy. So that's really the functionality of the Update Statistics statement. So if we move to slide 5, we're going to talk about Update Statistics low for the next couple slides. And slide 5 really shows the information that Update Statistics low collects. And you look at it and you say, you know, that's not a lot of information. You know, the number of rows, the number of pages to store data, you know, the second highest and second small value for a column, the number of unique values for the lead key of an index, how highly clustered an index is. And that clustered really deals with if I retrieve one value from an index, what's the chance that the next value will also be in the buffer pool? So it's kind of a reduction on I/O factor. And that is all the information. So when you say Update Statistics low, these are the pieces of information the optimizer gets to use in deciding your query plans. And for simple queries, you know, that might be enough. But for more large, complex queries, this isn't a lot. And so, you know, that's why distributions were created. And we'll talk about those a little later. We go on to slide 6. And We have update statistics low, the basic algorithm. When you step down inside update statistics low, what is it really doing and how does it operate? Basically, update statistics low will walk through the indexes. It walks through the indexes until it walks from the root down to the index leaf and across all leaf pages. In versions that still deal with the B-tree cleaner, this is a way of one of the only ways of submitting requests to the B-tree cleaner. If you have the B-tree scanner, this is not true. But update statistics low will auto balance or force the auto balancing of indexes if you have the B-tree cleaner. When it gets to the leaf level and it starts going across, it calculates the number of unique items on an index, the number of pages it encounters at the leaf level, so it's just basically counting each index page, a clustered factor, and then the values at each ends of the index, actually the second highest and second lowest value. And that is the algorithm for update statistics low. So it's basically walking the leaf level of every index for your table. Now, if we go on to slide 7, we're really going to start moving into data distributions. The update statistics low and the statistics were fairly simple. You know, the values and the type of data it collected, where distributions are not quite, they're not complex, but they're not as easy to get to visualize the data it provides you. So we're going to look at how to read them. On slide 7, we actually see output from a DB schema minus HD. And we have basically three columns. Column 1 represents the number of rows represented by a bucket. And a bucket is basically a range of values. So we take your table of X number of rows and you decide how many buckets you want. By default, we say each bucket represents 2% of the data. So we will start with the lowest value, and the lowest value in this table is minus 1, the one up front. The highest value in the first bucket is value 75. So this bucket contains values from minus 1 to 75. This bucket, 2% the size of this table, is 868,317 rows. So this bucket contains that number of rows. Between minus 1 and 75, there are 70 unique values. And so that is the information you have about a single bucket, is the number of unique, the number of values represented by the bucket, and the highest value in the bucket, and you can go to the previous bucket to find the range. Down at the bottom, we have something called overflow. And overflow, we have the number of rows and an exact value. And we'll talk a little bit more about overflow in a couple slides here. So with all this information, how does the optimizer choose to utilize it? There's a simple example. You know, let's say the optimizer, you have a filter, and you say the filter, you want to filter on value 40. Now, it's nice to know how many rows are going to be retrieved by this filter. And so the optimizer will find which bucket does value 40 fit in. And for ease of example, it fits in the first one, between minus 1 and 75. In that bucket, there are 70 unique values. So the optimizer takes the size of that bucket, 868,317, divides it by 70, and says, by this filter, there is going to be 12,404 rows returned. And so, and that is the average it will use for every value represented by these 70 unique values in that bucket. And that's, that, you know, that's an average. And to make sure that average is representative of the data, there is something called data skew. You know, we don't want a bucket to be weighed very heavily by a single value. And if a value exceeds 25% the size of a bucket, it is considered a data skew case. And if we go on to slide 9, we will really see what that means to us. We have value 43. For the value 43, there is 779,848 values of the number 43 in this table. It's definitely above 25% of 868,000. So it is a special case. If we included it in the bucket, it would just destroy all averages and make the averages a little meaningless. So it becomes a special case, and it's put in the overflow. And there is just a list of values and their counts put in the overflow. And that is really how the data skew case works. When the optimizer comes in, it first checks to make sure there's not an exact match in the overflow bin. If there's not, it finds the appropriate bucket, the appropriate range that the value sits in, and then approximates by the number of unique values in that bucket. So hopefully that gives you a feeling for how to read the data distribution information. And again, the only way to view the data distribution information is with dbschema-hd. That will print out exactly what you see here. And that information gives you, breaks the table down into ranges. Those ranges provide estimates on the values, and the estimates are fairly accurate. The one thing is these buckets and ranges are built at the time of update statistics. So if your data model changes, you know, the data change over time will make these become a little stale. Now if we move on, we will start looking at slide 10, which is the basic algorithm for update statistics. This algorithm is what is run for building distributions. The first thing building, when we look at distributions, we develop, update statistics develops a scan plan based on the available resources. And this is really key. Telling it how many resources it has and what it can use can greatly affect the time of update statistics, and we will look at that. If you say high, update statistics high, all rows in the tables are scanned and used for building distributions. So every row would be represented. If you say medium, we sample the number of rows. After we read those rows, we place those rows, each column is sent to a sort. And we sort the values in the rows, and then we count them building those distributions, because really we're just interested in how many rows are in a bucket, how many unique values, just some counters. And then there's a very important note I need to say here. Update Statistics will begin its own transaction. If you are already in a transaction, it will not begin a transaction. It will utilize yours. It deletes the old column, inserts the new, and again, if you do not run Update Statistics, it will commit immediately. So that delete and insert becomes instantaneous. If you are running in your own transaction, then the delete and commit are ignored, and the user supplied begin and commit transaction are utilized. If you run the statement to update a whole database, these deletes will start locking the different rows and sys distributions, and the locks will not be released until the user supplied commit is seen. And so I strongly recommend that you do not run update statistics in an explicit transaction, but let it manage itself using these implicit transactions. So now we've looked at the algorithm, let's go to slide 11 and look at the sample size. For high, the sample size is all the rows in the table. We'll look at every row. For medium, the misconception has often been that the size of the table affects the sample size. That's not true. The only things that affect the sample size currently are the confidence and resolution. So depending on the confidence and resolution you set, the sample size will be affected accordingly. And if the sample size, let's say you have a small table and the sample size you have set is 3,000 rows, but your table only has 100 rows in it, that becomes an update statistics high implicitly. Since the sample size is not based on the number of rows in the table, it sometimes can encompass a whole table. And if it does encompass a whole table, it will implicitly be moved to high. So if we look on slide 12, we actually see the sample size for different confidence and resolutions. If you look at the default, which is highlighted in the first row, a resolution of 2.5 and 95% samples just under 3,000 rows. So if you run update statistics medium on its default mode on a table that has 1 billion rows, you are going to sample just under 3,000 and base all of your decisions based on that sample of 3,000 rows. I think there's definitely some tuning and some information that can be provided so medium will work better in maybe some of your larger tables, and that might help out. So, and there's a variety of combinations of sample size and resolutions, and we will look more at what resolution and confidence does shortly here. Okay. If we go on to slide 13, one of the big questions is, you know, how much information is enough? And again, I really need to reiterate, the better the information, the more accurate the estimate. And that's really it is, the more accurate the estimate. It doesn't mean things run faster. It just means the estimate's more accurate. And if we look at slides 14 and 15 here, we'll start with 14. I try and bring that example out. It's a simple example, but it really drives the point. We have a simple table here with no statistics, a simple query. You know, the estimated cost is $20,888. The estimated number of rows is, you know, 6,760. And we have a simple sequential scan with a filter. And so that's no statistics. And now if you run medium, you notice a few things. The estimated cost is 21 compared to 20,000. The estimated number of rows is 19 compared to 6,760. More importantly, the plan went from a sequential scan to an index path. Reading a large number of rows via an index is not always very efficient. If the optimizer estimates we're going to read a large percentage of the table, it's going to do a sequential scan. Here, the optimizer provided the information to say we're going to read a small number of rows from the table, and an index path is much better. So in short, the overall performance of this query improved. The estimates were more accurate, and the query plan changed. And that is why the performance really was increased, was the query plan changed. So if we go on to slide 15, you see we have the medium case, and now we run update statistics high. And you see the estimated cost is 33 versus 21. You know, the estimated cost is close. It's not horrible. You know, they're very close. The estimated number of rows is 30. And in fact, the number of rows returned by this query is exactly 30. But in our medium case, we estimated 19. Pretty close. And more importantly, both queries use an index path. And, it, you know, to summarize, the overall performance of this query didn't change. Why? Because we're doing the same thing both before and after. You know, we're using the index to retrieve the rows. You know, the update statistics high, the information was more accurate. The estimated number of rows, the number of rows returned. So all that information was, you know, dead on. But the query plan didn't change. So the overall performance was the same. Now, this was a simple query without a lot of filters and complex joins and subqueries and unions and, you know, everything else programmers can throw at it. So there are, you know, times when that additional information pays off, but that's kind of on a knowing a little bit of the application and knowing what's going on, finding a query that's not optimized quite right, maybe providing it with more information. So, you know, that's trying to answer how much information is enough. Really, it's enough when the queries get optimized to really the most efficient plan, and providing more information is not going to make queries run faster. So we're going to change gears a little bit and look a little bit about improvements that have gone into update statistics in the recent past. The improvements are in all versions of 9.4 and version 10. These improvements we're going to be talking about are also into 9.30 UC3 and above. None of these improvements went into 9.20s. These improvements did go into 731 UD2 and above. So that is where the improvements are located. In which versions? It's a question I often get. And so let's dive right into those improvements now and go to slide 17. And we'll be talking about some of these improvements and giving you examples. So one of the biggest things that the update statistics had a problem with was if it needed memory, it could use up to 4 megabytes of memory. And if it needed a lot of memory, it would go to your MGM grant MGM memory grant manager, the MGM, and all your DS parameters and your onconfig, and request memory if it estimated it needed more than 100 megabytes. If it estimated it needed 90 megabytes, it would do 24 passes scanning your table with 4 megabytes. So, you know, instead of grabbing a little more memory, it would just sequentially scan your table over and over and over and over and over again, which on big systems isn't always very efficient. You know, those sequential scans cost a lot of resources. And so changing how and giving the DBAs control over that memory is what we've done. And that's done in a couple ways. One is we moved the default from 4 megabytes to 15 megabytes. So the default was raised. You can change the default by using DPUP space. And there's an example given there. You set DPUP space to 0:35, and you take the default of 15 megabytes up to 35 megabytes of memory. You cannot take setting the environment variable above 50 megabytes. Anything above that, it will not give you unless you go through MGM. So whatever you have your DPUP space default set at, if it estimates it needs over that amount of memory, it will go to MGM. That is the dividing line. And so there is no gap between the 4 megabytes of the lower bound and 100 megabytes of MGM. That threshold is one and the same. So you can always do a table with just one sequential scan if you really want to. The other thing is update statistics did not utilize our light scanning technology. We've created this great technology and use it in a lot of our data warehouse queries that do dirty reads and repeatable reads or, you know, different places along that, but update statistics didn't do that. So we allowed update statistics to utilize that technology. First, it can use light scans or a light scan light technology. And it can also do what we call set-oriented reads, which is go down, read a page of data, return all the rows of that data in one pass, and then go down and process the next page. So it's operating in sets of data, not row by row. And that significantly reduced the I/O time and the call path length. Those are two big improvements, but probably the biggest is on slide 18. One of the first things, you know, when looking at this is, you know, this is like a real big black box because you have this statement, you really can't see the outputs and the inputs, you don't know what's going on, you don't have any way of viewing what resources are used, and so we needed to change that. And if you turn set explain on and then run update statistics for medium or high, you will get a lot of information about how update statistics operates. And we'll see a concrete example of that later on in the presentations. The other thing, another improvement to update statistics is when we talked about update statistics low, it would walk all the leaf pages. Now, if your table was fragmented, it would not do all the index fragments in parallel, but it did them in serial. It would walk one index fragment. When that was done, it would walk the second index fragment. When that was done, it would walk the third, and so on. And so one of the first changes was to have update statistics walk the index fragments in parallel. In order to keep backwards compatibility, that if you have PDQ priority set to 0, we will walk them serially. If you have PDQ priority set to 4, we will walk 40% of the fragmented indexes at one time. If you have PDQ priority set to 10, we will do all fragments at once. And so that's a way of, for you to control the how parallel update statistics will go in the low mode is by the PDQ priority. If you don't have fragmented indexes, then this will not provide any additional help for you. But it's a way of allowing those large fragmented indexes to have update statistics low run in parallel. and that greatly affects the performance of update statistics low. If we go to slide 19, there were some various errors that would be printed out with update statistics when it would lock, when we run into locking errors. Set lock mode to wait, we try and implicitly set it inside of update statistics, and when applications run into it, a lot of those things were fixed and cleaned up. Range scanning of fragments is slow when you do large fragmented indexes, which update statistics does. We change the internal algorithm. It's more of a binary search merge, which was much more efficient. But again, that improvement only affects large fragmented indexes. And when I say large fragmented indexes, probably you have to have an index with greater than 8 fragments. So those are really the improvements that were introduced, and again, that goes into the versions. We'll contrast some of the work between some of those, and we see that on slide 20. Update statistics medium, if you look at the memory requirements, because the sample size is fixed, I created a table by row size, giving you different confidence and resolutions, and displayed the amount of memory. So if you knew you had rows at 300 bytes and you had a specific confidence and resolution, you can look it up there. One of the lighter green indicates what would be done in the older version. The light and the darker green indicates what is covered in a single pass in the larger, in the newer versions. So, you know, the number of passes required by update statistics medium is now reduced for some of the larger sets. And so that's really what that's trying to show, is by increasing our default memory size, we can cover more sampling cases, and it really helps performance. Everyone always tries to ask the question on slide 21, well, how much memory does update statistics really require? And if I tried to come out with a simple rule that covers the bulk of the memory, it's really the number of rows sampled or read, and you sum up the column width and add additional 2 pointers to it. So if you're on a 64-bit, you're going to add 8 bytes. If you're on a 32-bit, you're going to add 4 bytes for the pointer size. And that tries to estimate the bulk memory required by update statistics. And the memory rules on slide 22 have really been covered already, so I'm going to skip those. You know, we talked about the 4 megabytes and DPUP space and MGM. I'm going to go right into slide 23 with an example. And this example is going to contrast before the changes took place and after. In the example, I tried to create some tables with columns of round numbers, so when we do a little math, we can add it up. And we're going to say this table had 500,000 rows. And so if you look at slide 24, you have the customer ID, which is an integer of 4 bytes. 4 bytes times 500,000 means you take about 2 megs of storage. I'm kind of discounting the pointers because I want to keep the math simple. So it takes 2 megabytes of memory. Similarly, the FNAME is a char50, which takes 50 bytes times 500,000 rows, means that it takes about 25 megabytes of memory. And we go down all the columns. So in order to do one pass, you know, a significant amount of memory is going to be required. But if we look at, if we have PDQ priority set to 0, this is on slide 25, scan 1 is going to do the customer ID, which is 2 megabytes, and the state, which is 1 megabyte, for a total of 3 megabytes, staying under our 4 megabyte rule. So that's one scan of the table. FNAME is going to be done by itself because it's already over our limit of 4 megabytes, and it's going to do multiple scans to actually accomplish that. And scan 3, scan 4, scan 5, scan 6, all of them cannot be combined because they would increase the, if you put two columns together, the size would be over 4 megabytes. Now, if the optimizer, if Update Statistics decided this was going to take more than 100 megabytes, and we actually went and used 100 megabytes, we would take customer ID, first name, last name, state, and zip code, and do that all those columns in one scan. And then it would do address 1 and address 2. So we reduced the scans from 6 to 3, but we provided 100 megabytes of memory to Update Statistics. And that is a significant savings because now we did a single in-memory sort. We didn't have to use disk to do our sort, where the previous example needed disk to do its sort. And on top of that, it took at least 6 sequential scans of the table. So just the sequential scans alone dropped our time in half, plus all the efficiencies in the sort. So there's an example of how utilizing the memory can really speed up Update Statistics. Now, Update Statistics has 2 parameters it can take. Confidence, which I would, you know, it's really a factor in the sample size, but if you go back and look at the chart, it's really a minor factor in the sample size, and that's really all it does. I would say don't waste a lot of brain cells on remembering confidence. Resolution, on the other hand, I would say pay attention to, which is on slide 27. It's an important factor. Originally, when we talked about distributions, we said distributions were buckets that represented a percentage of the data. The size of the bucket is determined by the resolution. So if a table has 100,000 rows and the resolution is 2%, each bucket is going to be 2,000 rows. So we will have 2,000 rows in each bucket, and that will represent our data. The other thing that resolution affects is the overflow size, because the overflow size is a percentage of the resolution. 25%. So as you drop the resolution, the data skew and overflow becomes smaller and more special cases are created. If we now go to slide 28, we will look at a practical example of running and looking at the set explain. This is done on my workstation, so it's nothing super great. There's 215,000 rows, 445 bytes, and a uniprocessor. So, there's some of the groundwork to set the frame for this example. And when we go to slide 29, we look at how Update Statistics would run before any changes were made. So if we tried to look into Update Statistics, how it ran without any changes we talked about, you would see, and this is how a set explain printed out, we run it on a table, the mode's high, there's a number of bins and the size of the bin, which is the buckets we're talking about. It estimates there's 101.4 megabytes of data. We're given 4 megs, and we're going to do 10 sequential scans, which prints out the order of the sequential scans and then the time it takes to do each scan. And that takes 146 seconds. So, that's what would happen. Now, just installing the new default and trying to run update statistics again, really the only change is the line that says sort memory granted. And that is 15 megabytes. And notice that pass 1 now does columns 9, 8, 10, 5, and 7 in a single pass. Pass 2 does columns 6 and 1 in a single pass, and 3, 2, and 4 are done in their own separate pass. This took the time down to 98 seconds. So that's almost a 30% drop, 50 seconds from our 146. But wait, there's more. We can now turn on PDQ. And when we turn on PDQ, we need to make sure our data warehouse parameters are set up to give us the memory we want. And a few things to note in this set explain is the line that says PDQ memory granted. That's different. Before it used to say sort memory granted. So now we know we got the memory because we turned on PDQ. We estimated we needed 101. We gave ourselves a little more. We got 106 megabytes of memory. You see, we do one pass of the table doing all columns. Index scans are disabled. We don't want to scan the index if we can do it all in one pass of the table. And light scans are also enabled. And the total time was 29 seconds. So here, we went from scanning in 146 seconds to produce the update statistics to 29 seconds completing the update statistics. That's a pretty major drop. And the efficiencies we talked about were, one, the memory, and two, the scanning technology. And what you see there is exactly what you'd see if you turned on update or set explain before running update statistics. So now if we go to slide 32, tuning with the new statistics. If you have the new versions that have these improvements, what are some of the recommendations we can make? One is, you can turn on PDQ when running update statistics. Make sure that you have your DS total memory set, your total number of queries set to what you want, because that will determine how much memory update statistics can acquire from the memory grant manager. And that is that will really affect. The more memory you can give update statistics, it generally improves performance fairly drastically. If you do turn on PDQ, one thing to be very cautious of is that you do not compile your stored procedures. Stored procedures execute with the PDQ priority they were compiled with. And there is syntax. You can say update statistics for table. And if you say for table, or for table customer, either one of those, it just does the tables. It does not do the stored procedures. So there is syntax that specifically avoids compiling stored procedures, and that's all you need to do. It's nothing hard. It's nothing difficult. You just need to be aware if you say set PDQ priority, update statistics, it will do your whole database and all your stored procedures. What you really want to say is update statistics for table. The memory is really important. And you saw by the algorithm we do sorting. So you can decide if you want to do parallel sorting and take advantage of that if you are not already. Another thing to look at on slide 33 is the resolution. You might want to consider dropping the resolution. If you have a lot of data with a lot of duplicates or, you know, some random data skew, dropping the resolution, one, gives you a larger sample size for medium, and two, the resolution goes down, so all those data skew cases that maybe were just under the limit now fall in the data skew case, and you get better averages. And so some considerations for resolution, you know, that's something you want to look at. I'm not saying 1.5 is the best number for you, but it's something you really can look at. You know, if you have 2%, you know, you're going to have 2% of the data represented in the bin. If you have 1.5, you're going to have 1.5%. So some of the old recommendations were people would start and update statistics and start two or three copies of those running in parallel. They would be, you know, separate independent invocations of update statistics. First name, last name, address. And what that did is it let you do many columns at once. The reason for that was update statistics would not utilize the memory or resources you would give it unless it came under certain special conditions to do that for you. Now, what we will do is if you give update statistics the resources, it will package FNAME, LNAME, and address and do them with one sequential scan of the table. And that's what we saw in looking at the set explain. So the old recommendations on 34 create a set of new recommendations that you see on 35. You really want to start only one update statistics to get the optimal time. That will do many columns at a single time for medium and high. It requires one scan and can produce the distributions for all columns. And so that really is where you will get a big bang for your buck. I know a lot of people might use a tool called DoStats on the IIEG website. I think Art has been a gracious person and provided that for a lot of people. And we have worked with Art, and Art has new versions that definitely convert from the old recommendations to the new recommendations, and things work out very well, so just wanted to make you aware of that. Some other information that if you were really interested in the subjects, there is, you know, several different papers available. There's the URLs to them. You know, one deals with an overview of the optimizer. You know, tuning update statistics, a lot of the information we covered here is also in that paper. Something about predicate inference. The performance manual has a lot of the base assumptions made if you have no statistics. And the SQL reference manual provides some great documentation about the different syntaxes, because they are not as straightforward as that maybe they could be. I'm going to just put a quick plug in for IDUG down in Tampa in May. Well, there'll be a lot of us there. I'll be there. I get to do several fun sessions. The information on demand, which will be in October, is being put on, and it will be a great event. And I believe that's in Anaheim. And, you know, I think we... you know, Linda, who's put on this, and Christine, and all those who go to put these talks on, I'd like to give them a big thanks, because, you know, they do a lot of work behind the scenes, and I really think this is a great session, a great way to talk with a lot of the DBAs, and I've really enjoyed doing it. So at this time, I'd like to, Michael, the moderator, I'd like to... turn control back over to you, and I think at this time, are we going to be doing the questions?
Oh, thank you. Actually, before we take your questions, we will conduct a brief electronic survey. And I'd like to ask each of you to listen to the entire question and all of the possible responses, And then please answer by firmly pressing the star key, followed by the number on your touchtone phone that corresponds to your choice. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. And there will be a brief pause between each question to allow everyone a chance to respond. And for our first question, if you are currently using any version of IDS 7, please press star 1. And we'll pause for just a moment to allow you a chance to signal. Our second question, if you are currently using any version of IDS 9 earlier than 9.4, please press star 1. And we'll pause for another moment. Question number 3. When does your company plan to go to version 10.0? If you are already using 10.0, please press star 1. If you don't know, press star 2. If it will be within 1 to 6 months, press star 3. If it will be between 6 and 12 months, press star 4. And if it will be longer than 12 months, please press star 5. And again, we'll pause. Next, the level of technical detail in this presentation was, if you thought it was about right, please press star 1. If it was not technical enough, please press star 2. And if it was too technical, press star 3. Again, we'll pause. Our fifth question, we'd like you to rate the speaker for today's teleconference. If you thought he was excellent, please press star 1. If you thought he was good, press star 2. If you thought he was fair, press star 3. If you thought he was poor, press star 4. We'll pause for a moment. And number 6, please rate the overall effectiveness of today's conference. If you thought it was excellent, please press star 1. If you thought it was good, press star 2. If you thought it was fair, press star 3. If you thought it was poor, press star 4. And for our last question, would you like someone from IBM to contact you in regards to Informix? If yes, please press star 1. If no, press star 2. And again, we'll pause before we go to your questions. And that does conclude the polling session for today. We do thank you very much for participating. And at this time, we would like to take your questions. If you'd like to ask a question today, please press star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. We'll take as many questions as time permits and proceed in the order that you signal us. Again, if you are joining us with a phone that has a mute function, please make sure the mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 if you would like to ask a question today. Our first question will come from Jeff Edgar.
Hello, this is Jeff Edgar from BAE Systems, and my question is, we run the geodetic data blade here in combination with IDS, and we'd like to know if there are any special considerations that we could make with respect to running update statistics for performance as well as for making queries more efficient.
Jeff, I think there's two sides, and to be honest, I was familiar a little bit. You know, I know there were some statistical changes made in the geodetic data blade to improve the types of information gathered for it. The two separate parts are each data blade has its own update statistics function, which is independent of the update statistics of the other data. So when you run update statistics on, you know, your ints and all that type, you're going to gather data. When you run update statistics on the indexes, which is really done by update statistics low, that's going to call the access method for the update statistics in the geodetic. And the access method has complete control over the resources allocated. So PDQ priority, DPUP space does not apply to any of those when executing the access method for the geodetic indexes. So, you know, if there's anything specific inside of that, I'm not aware of it. As for in combination, the update statistics low is going to run. If the indexes are fragmented, it's going to execute them in parallel for the normal data. But again, the accessor method for the geodetic is going to do whatever it does, and there's no control by the Informix engine of that. Unfortunately, I'm just not aware of, you know, I know there was a definite time when we went through and improved the types of information included by the geodetic data blade to gather better information, but I'm not sure if any performance changes underneath it. I don't know if that helps you out at all.
Is there any published information on this, John?
On the information I just gave you?
Or even extensions which relate to the geodetic specifically?
You know, I'm not aware of the geodetic specifically because I get involved with it more on a case-by-case basis, and I know what it does in a high-level overview, and when I need to get into it, I have to go into it, but I'm not aware of anything specifically published. You know, if I find something, I'll definitely pass it off to Suzanne and get it to you guys that way. I'll take an action item to try and find something, but I'm not aware of anything, Jeff.
Okay, thank you
very much,
Specific
to the geodetic.
Thanks very much.
Robert's probably a good person to ask doing that March talk if there is anything.
Our next question today will come from Malcolm Whelan.
John, Malcolm Williams from Panacea.
Hi, Malcolm. How are you doing today?
Fine, thanks. And you?
Terrific.
John, are there any penalties for having too many distributions?
Too many distributions?
Yeah.
I would probably answer that in two parts, Malcolm. One is the resolution, and I'm going to break this down. So, you know, if you were to put the resolution to like 0.001, you know, that means you're going to have a lot of buckets. And there is a time, you know, when you go from, you know, 100 buckets to 200 buckets in a binary search, that's really not a whole lot. But when you're going from, you know, 100 buckets to 10,000 buckets, you know, there is a little bit more search time. So that's on the resolution. If you're talking about just the sheer number of distributions, there is something that you do need to tune. There is a data distribution cache. And if that cache is too small and constantly causing distributions to go out and in, then there might be a penalty associated with it. Short, if that cache is tuned properly, then there's really no penalty. So one OnSat you can use, I believe it's OnSat-GDSC or OnSat-GCAC will print out all the caches. And you could look at the size and, you know, how many you have going in and out. So that's really where the penalty, if that cache is not sized properly, Malcolm.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, John.
Sure.
And Diane Garcia has a question.
Hi, John. How important is it to drop the distributions, run update low? I mean, should I be doing this often?
I really don't recommend, in a day-to-day procedure, I really don't like dropping distributions ahead of time and then running update statistics medium or high. I would let the medium or high do the drop for you because then there is always distributions there.
Okay, great.
If you drop them, let's say you drop them at midnight, and then you start a script to start building them. If a user just happens to start a query at 12:05 using distributions that you have not built yet, they will get no information. And so their query will perform very poorly. But if you do it, if you let the update statistics that builds them, you know, we looked at the algorithm where it does a begin work, delete, insert, commit, we internally hold back the users. We implicitly set lock mode to wait when going against that lock. And even prior to that, there's a data distribution cache that we were talking about with Malcolm. If they're in the cache, they never even come and see the system catalog lock. So if they're in the cache, great, they never see a lock. If they do encounter the catalogs, they're going to wait for a second while the insert gets done, and then they complete. But I really use drop distributions more of a, you know, some type of other type of maintenance rather than in the regular distribution, because I'm just afraid if someone starts an application up in that window where they're missing and prepares all their statements, they're going to utilize the information that's there, which is very little.
Thank you.
Is that getting at your question, Diane?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Super.
We have a question from Nancy Valsbaugh.
Hi, Nancy.
I wanted to ask about blocking statistics. Can you tell us what exactly is getting blocked?
You know, Nancy, I had a very difficult time hearing you. Could you repeat?
Sorry about that. I hope this is better. I wonder if you could comment on the line that occurs during statistics.
Michael, is there something you can do to help out? I'm not hearing Nancy.
You know, I'm not exactly sure exactly with the question she's trying to ask either. And ma'am, if you are using a speakerphone, maybe pick up the handset. Because you are coming through broken.
Just a second.
That came through real loud and clear.
Okay. Can you hear now?
I can hear you perfectly, Nancy.
Okay, great. Sorry about that. It must have been a connection on my phone. I was asking about the lock that occurs during update statistics. It seems as though we're currently having a lot of issues with our update statistics running, and then it seems to affect other things that are working at the time. Can you touch on like what exactly is getting locked and how it's going to affect different things and why the tuning to a shorter amount of time would help us?
Sure, Nancy. To talk a little bit about the algorithm and the lock, the begin work, there's two. When you're building distributions, there's a set of things that get locked, and when you're building statistics, there's a set of rows that get updated. First, you don't want to run this in explicit transactions because then it will collect the locks and not release them until the statement is complete. if you're talking distributions, the first thing that happens when you read a distribution, a user goes and looks in the distribution cache. If they're there, great, the information is returned immediately, and you never even go read tables. If they're not in the cache, then it has to go read the system catalogs, retrieve them the system catalogs, put them in the cache, and then return the cache entry to the user. And so, you know, one thing is if you are running into a lot of lock errors, I'd first look at your cache size, and it might be too small, and hence always having to reread them from the system catalogs. But the lock itself is to the distributions is basically a begin work. We do a delete for all for the column you're currently updating, and it deletes all rows in the sysdistrib table for that column, and then reinserts them. And again, if you're not in a in an explicit transaction, as soon as it does a reinsert, it commits them. And during that time interval, those, you know, the delete locks the rows, and the insert locks its rows until it's done, and then it does a commit and releases all the locks. So that is really the distributions. The update statistics low is basically an update to N rows, to, you know, the sys indexes, and I think sys columns. Just the values that were listed up there in that earlier slide when we talked about which values low deals with. It's just an update to that information. So the sys tables, sys columns, and sys indexes for low. So I wasn't sure if you meant the low or the distribution. So hopefully that covers both for you, Nancy.
Thanks, John.
Sure.
Moving on to Zev Berezin. Please go ahead.
Hi, John. First of all, thanks for a great presentation.
My pleasure, Zev.
Okay. Second, what's an estimated cost? What does that mean?
Estimated cost, I'd probably have to go to accounting, and it's probably like a widget. It is really a relative number assigned by the optimizer. And you can't say an estimated cost is, it's not like an estimated number of seconds. It's not an estimated I/O count. It's a combination of items put together by the optimizer that builds up, you know, so much. We estimate this query is going to have do so much I/O. Here's a costing value associated with the I/O. Here's how much CPU time we're going to take. Here's a weighting factor between the two. And from that, we develop a number, and that number is the cost. So if you're looking for it into, is it the second, you know, is it an estimated number of seconds, estimated number of IOs, it's really all that lumped in one number. And how the optimizer uses that cost is directly comparing which plans are cheaper. When it decides between plan A and plan B, and we're assuming we're assigning solely on cost, then we use the cheaper of the two plans. And the cheaper of the two plans is just the cost. But it's built up of predominantly a CPU factor and an I/O factor combined by a weighting factor.
Okay, thank you, Jeff.
Sure, Zeb.
We'll take a question from Rob Schmitz.
Yes, thanks. I've got a question about the recommendations for when you run medium and high on which columns and association with the indexes and so forth. Are those recommendations that have been around for years, are they still valid?
Great question, Rob. And I'm going to answer it by saying they're still fairly valid. Not saying they don't have to be tuned a little bit here or there and then tuned a little bit here or there for your application. But generally, if the most information you can collect is to run update statistics high and low on your entire system. But that all goes along with that's the slowest and most costly update statistics to run. On the other side, you have not collecting any, which is the cheapest. And so what we tried to do is come up with, well, what is important, keeping in mind that the more you do, the slower, the longer it takes. And the first thing that came up is, well, what's important to databases? Indexes. Well, let's focus on the indexes. So we really, and if you look at the recommendation, it focuses strongly on collecting the distributions revolving around the indexes. The other thing to note, most of the decisions are made revolving around indexes. Which index to use, which index not to use, what join method to use across indexes. If you're joining on a column that is not involved in any index whatsoever, the only choice is which join method are you going to use, a hash join or a nested loop join. And some of that can be handled with some of the basic information, but again, giving it a little more, it might tune it a little bit. So if you try and look at the motives behind building those recommendations, it was what's important to users are their indexes, so let's collect a lot of information about the indexes and very little on the rest. And so that's how those recommendations came to be. Behind the scenes, though, most of the important decisions also revolve around indexes, so it fits well together.
Okay.
So, the only thing, if you're talking about, and I should have clarified this up front, I made the assumption that you were talking about the update statistics recommendations for which columns, not how to run update statistics, correct?
Correct, yeah. Right now what we're doing is like a medium distributions only for tables with indexes, high on each column that's in a single column index, and then a high distributions only for columns that head an index or make an index unique. And then we do a low on all columns in each multi-column index, and then a high on all tables that have no indexes.
Yeah. Just so you know, low really only runs on indexes, so you don't need to spend the work to go find out which columns are in the index for low, because it really only walks the indexes. So,
right.
And the other thing to be aware of that sometimes people often miss is if you say updates, let's say you have an index A that has columns A, B, and C, and you say update statistics high columns A, B, and C, and that's all you say, that does both a high and a low.
Right.
You need to say update statistics high distributions only to just collect the distributions and not run the update statistics low.
And you can stack the columns up. At one time we were doing that where we stacked up a whole bunch of columns in each statement. And then I've kind of fallen into where we do each column in its own update statistics statement. But if we have enough memory, then you can stack up more in a single update stats statement.
Correct. And it will. The benefit of that is if you have the memory and do stack the columns, one scan of the table will produce distributions for multiple columns. And the scan of the table is a majority of the cost associated with update statistics. So if you go from individual scans to all of a sudden getting a grouping factor of, say, 3, your update statistics time would go down by 1/3 immediately.
Oh, wow. And if you had a whole bunch, then it will just chop them up appropriately.
It will chop them up based on the resources you give it, and you can see that in SetExplain. It will show you this is the amount of memory I estimate I need to do the update statistics. here's the amount of memory you told me to use, here is how I chop them up. And so that's right there. To give you an example, when we first did this work and prototyped it with a customer, their update, it was a large customer who had a large machine, gigabytes of memory. The tables were fairly good size. Their update statistics were taking 12 hours. Doing nothing more, and they did have the columns originally grouped by table. So they would do all table in one statement. We put in the fact that they could use 200 megabytes of memory based on their PDQ, and their update statistics went from 12 hours to 2 hours and 5 minutes.
Oh, wow.
So, and really the savings was the efficiency and the short sorting because we had memory and just the number of sequential scans that were removed from their system. So there is a lot that can be done with this update statistics and grouping columns together.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Sure, Rob.
Alexei Sonkin, please go ahead with your question.
My question, I actually have a couple of questions. One question is about update statistics for fragmented tables. As I can see from your presentation that you actually keep information about distributions on per table basis, per table ID basis, not per fragment basis. What information is the optimizer currently using when you need to construct a query plan per specific fragment? For example, with fragment elimination, it might happen that the query actually runs against a single fragment and the distribution and size of this fragment can be different than the size of the entire table.
It can, and to some extent, the important information, you're going to do fragment elimination based on one column or group of columns. And that information is represented in, let's say you're doing date ranges. You're fragmenting by date ranges.
Yeah, this is what we are doing.
And you have a distribution built on date ranges. So, and I'm interested in today or last week. And when I say, select some where date equals 7 days ago, it's going to do the fragment elimination, but the distribution of that data correctly represents the data in that fragment because the data in that fragment is going to come back and say, the bucket's going to say there were this many groups for this date range.
Yeah, but it actually, I agree with the distribution, but with index sizes, number of levels in indexes can be different for different index fragments.
And the distributions don't reflect index levels or anything like that. That's really just the statistics. And statistics are really there more as a historical. When we originally had, before we even had a cost-based optimizer, or right when it was first put in, we put in the statistics and right away found that that information was not enough. And so if you go back to version 5, there was a statement called update statistics. It wasn't low. It wasn't anything. That's all there was. And what it did was low. And so when we keep the number of levels, it's more from a historical perspective than a, and they are used sometimes, but they're typically used more in the simple queries, not with fragmentation. The distributions, it's really used. And I do understand that there's data correlation issues when you get into fragmentation, but when you start looking at the different combinations you can build up, distributions might not be the right way to go. And there is a lot of work being done in the update statistics area. There's a lot of things that I think customers will be very happy to see that's being worked on in this area. Some of this technology, you know, we are doing a lot of cross-technology between DB2 and Informix. You know, some things Informix has, some things DB2 has. This is an area where we are learning from DB2 and pulling some of their, utilizing some of their knowledge that they've acquired in this area. So I think you'll see things in the future that you'll be really happy with that will help out in those correlation. When you take a date filter and correlate it with a filter that represents maybe your fourth column in the index.
Oh, I see.
But really, you know, you got the data elimination for sequential scans, or you have the basically the columns in an index that you're interested in to make a majority of your decisions by. So I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, that definitely helps. Can I have a couple more quick questions? First, about update statistics high. There was a recommendation previously that if you're running update statistics high on a column which is leading a first column of an index, then this update statistics high runs more efficiently against index. That is, internally you're running it against index, not against table. Is it still correct?
It's really a trade-off depending on your system. If you run it against an index, the index is pre-sorted, and so we don't have to do the sort. The problem is when reading an index, it's very, very random, and it's a lot of random I.O. Since we put in light scans and the ability to do I.O. in big blocks, and you can do parallel sorts, you can actually, if you were to try and get the optimal time, you can actually get a faster update statistics without reading an index.
Okay. So does it mean that I should avoid in the future making update statistics for a single column and just make update statistics high for all sort of for all columns that for which I want to make update statistics high as a one statement for this for table and only have low for index keys?
You know, I think you'll be better off because the other advantage you get is grouping. If all of a sudden you now get two columns being done together, you know, you get one light scan that produces indexes on two columns, it really cuts the time in half.
Yeah, I see. This is a great. Yeah, and I have actually one more question which might be interesting for other people about reoptimizing store procedures on the fly when update statistics is running. A typical situation is when we have 24/7 system and I'm running update statistics while queries and store procedure statements are executed in the statement. What is the condition and how it can be influenced when a SQL statement or store procedure should be reoptimized on the fly when update statistics is finished on the table which is involved in store procedure or a query?
You know, generally, a lot of people, you know, are... It's best to do your compilation of stored procedures, you know, after you've done your update statistics, because then they get to use the new plans and new statistics.
But this is unrealistic for 24/7 system, which cannot be stopped.
I was unaware of that it stopped the system.
But my understanding is that when store procedures are running 10 times a second, then I don't have a chance even to execute update statistics for this store procedure because it will be executed much faster automatically when this store procedure is invoked.
If
we try to execute update statistics for procedure from the same script which is running update statistics for tables, then we have a very big chance to deadlock SysProc's plan table.
Okay. I mean, if you get a deadlock on SysProc plans, that should be a bug called into support. I mean, that should never happen.
Your opinion, this should never happen.
It should never happen.
Okay, we should.
The other thing, you know, I would, if you're that heavily into stored procedures, I'd make sure your stored procedure cache is set to a
good size. Yeah, it's set to a very high value.
Yeah, because, I mean, generally, we are going to optimize the ones that are on disk and put them in disk, and then after they're optimized, we go mark the cache as dirty, and then you pick up the new copy of the plan. It's not really marked as dirty in the cache until after the plan is created.
I see.
So, you know, I can't say I've been in that code in the last couple months, but, I mean, I've been in it enough that I feel a little good about it, but...
Okay, maybe just...
You know what, I think I need to cut it off here because we only have a minute or two left. And
are there
other questions, Michael, that we need to get to, or is this the last one?
We do have a couple more questions in the queue, but we are, like you said, at the time for our conference stand.
Should we take one more and then end it?
We certainly can. That question will then come from Mike Bedar.
Hi, Mike Bedar from ESRI.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing today?
Pretty good, John. Robert had given a talk at the last chat about the spatial data blade, and I had asked a question about variable length records for smart blobs, and he had mentioned a new onconfig parameter called max field data pages, and I was just wondering, is there any update statistics that might influence the way smart blobs are accessed and, you know, that type of thing?
You know, update statistics strictly optimize or provides information for the optimizer. It doesn't influence smart blobs and how they're stored, because that's really what Maxfield Data Pages deals more with, storage down on disk.
Okay.
And the algorithm used. You know, when you come up with those algorithms, you need to, you know, there's some, you can be very space conscious, but then allocations sometimes are a little slower because you're trying to, you know, utilize every byte you have. Or you can sometimes be a little less, you know, there's trying to balance there. You got to leave a little space here and there of little pieces, but be more efficiency conscious or speed conscious.
Okay.
And Maxfield Data Pages kind of gives you, lets the user to influence that a little bit. Not to say that, you know, there's some reports of, for instance, by OnCheck and a few things like that that will tell you how you're doing, but update statistics really is on providing information about how your data is normalized or how your data looks, not from a physical perspective, but from the values inside the data.
Okay, yeah, I understand.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay.
So
yeah.
Update statistics wants to know, you know, not that you have 10 ones laid out on different pages, but, you know, you have, there's 10 ones, 10 tens, 10 20s. You know, the values and sites. Okay.
Very good. Thanks, John.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Michael. And again, I'd like to thank everyone else on the call, and Linda and Jerry and Christine for all the hard work that they've put into making these calls possible. And hopefully we can do this again.
Once again, thank you all for joining us today. If you did have a question and it was not able to be asked and answered, you may email, once again, Christine Normile at christine.normile@us.ibm.com. Again, if you did have a question and it was not able to be asked and answered, please email christine.normile@us.ibm.com. And that does conclude today's conference call. We thank you for participating. Have a great day.